Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.
It's a marvelous night for a moon dance with the stars up above in your eyes. A fantabulous night to make romance neath the cover of October skies.
What's up? What's up, everybody? Welcome aboard to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz, and I got my man, my friend, the guy in the big cow jacket, Scott Shalady, Scott the cow guy .com, TJM Securities, all about town. On Fox, on Sky Business, on everything. What's up, Scott?
How are you doing? Been busy lately, but yeah, everything, all good.
It's all good. So, Scott, the first thing is you're the first guy who about, 10, 11 months ago said that the 10-year note is going to go to at least 1.5%, if not lower. And certainly, I know we popped a little bit recently, but as of a couple of weeks ago, I think we got down to 1.55 or 1.57. What's your take of that mess?
It was 153, and it's because slowly but surely we're waking up here to the U.S. that we're not going to be able to do this all on our own, and we're being affected by everything around us. And I think I thought about this yesterday, but I think commodities are going to lead the way this year, especially with oil, and then we're also going to suffer from this rate hike rhetoric garbage that we keep talking about here while everybody else around the world is cutting rates or devaluing their currencies to, say, import some inflation. Those are going to be the main drivers. So as long as we got that dollar winging about, and as long as we still have this recession in the commodity sector, it's going to be a tough year. And I don't see how anybody thinks that we're going to be able to pull ourselves up by our bootstraps. I mean, why is a 1.0 GDP a beat? Just because we beat 0.4%, why are we celebrating 1%? I think this is now 10 years we haven't had 3% growth.
I'm in total agreement with you. I don't get it, but I did hear a week ago or so, Barron said that this year will be 3% growth, and I'd like to know where they think they're going to get it from.
I mean, maybe they know something that we don't, but it's not going to be possible. No way.
I don't see it. We don't peddle fear, but I don't see good things on the horizon. And I think, and this is a direct to you, because one of the biggest struggling groups in our economy are the farmers. And I know that there's a lot of land leases out there that I know that you felt this coming a long time ago with this commodity collapse. What's going to happen with all these guys that are strung out on this land that they have?
And all the loans that they got for their new equipment. And I mean, we've seen ripples like this already. Probably 2 or 3 years ago, we saw the secondhand combine market just tank. And slowly but surely, you've seen the negative news come out of, say, John Deere and Caterpillar. The farmers are struggling because we've got this recession in commodity prices. They're in the middle of it. And at the same time, they haven't seen their input costs come down like they've seen their product come down. So, you've got fertilizer and the likes, and those things haven't really caught up to what the commodities have done themselves. So they're getting hit from all sides right now, and it's they had a good run for a little while, but now they're really taking it on the chin, and it's not right, and we need to see a lot of these inputs come down to help them out, because God only made so much land, but I was going to say God only made so many dollars, but we've been printing them like they're going out of style. But I think that the farmer's going to have to be especially efficient over the next couple of years, because it's going to be tough.
No, I mean, I think it's, and that's one of the things that we, work on all the time is, the farmer's hedge and teaching farmers and giving them better education to actually get a better way to take care of their crop and their livestock, and to keep them in a better business without throwing away so much money through some of the things. And I'm happy to say and proud to say that Scott Shalady, the cow guy, will be also doing all the execution for us in our hedging program. He is part of the Bubba Report, and he's part of the Bubba team. And so that's going to make it exciting, because we were both believers, I believe, Scott, in that we need to protect, cost and protect where we are, so we know the absolute bottom line where we are going to have our money at, because at the end, we've got to make sure we're able to protect that. Would you agree?
Yeah, I mean, I think the simplest way I can put it, Todd, is we need to control the things we can control, and let whatever whatever else happens. So we can control the hedges. We can control how efficient we are with our balance sheet. You know, we can't control nature, and we can't control outside influences. But the things that we can't control, we better darn well be doing a great job of them.
And that's what we do. And that's why, you know, we put together our team to make sure that everybody, you know, we do this with equities, we do it with farm products. But this is where we want to make sure that, you know, look, Scott and I have been down for a total of probably 75 years or 70 years in some exchange or another. And Scott, of course, being a dual citizen, actually did, you know, in Europe for a while. But at the end of the day, I mean, you can learn how to protect, and options have become a great tool to help the average guy, if he knows how to put together a synthetic model, can really take care of it and watch those costs. So by like building a proper marketing plan, if you're a farmer or a producer, to understand the very cost that Scott's talking about, I think that becomes the way to actually run the business. I mean, this is not my daddy's farmland anymore, because it's now become a much more of a true business because of all the extra costs you never had before. And you're from that era and area. Would that be a fair statement to say?
Yeah, and there's two types of things that we can do. We can, like you said, and I've said, you know, be very, very efficient with our hedges so that we can maximize the things that we can control. And there's also some just plain out proprietary strategies that maybe we can actually gain a few pennies here and there too. So both of those things, I mean, one, to protect the crop that you can sleep at night, you don't have to worry about it. It's kind of like the Ronco trade, I call it. It's like set it and forget it, right? and then we can also see what we can do about capitalizing on some proprietary information. But absolutely, those are the types of things we have to do now, because, you know, and there's other things that we don't really even give much attention to, Todd. It's like, you know, we're going through this worry right now, and farmers will know what I'm talking about when I say that, you know, we have a family farm as well. And the capital gains tax now that they're talking about on family farms, can you imagine paying capital gains on a family business? I mean, how does it stay in the family? I mean, people are going to have to liquidate their farms to pay the capital gains tax. And then, so there's a lot of other things out there than just even efficient hedges. We can also start to speak about some of these laws that may or may not be passed. Now, they've threatened to do this before, and it's always failed at the first fence, but it's still something that we always have to keep in the back of our minds.
Well, it's something that makes you have to worry about it, and that becomes the bigger problem. I mean, the one thing I know for sure is the idiots that are trying to make up the laws have no idea what it's all about, nor do they have any idea about what a market structure or formation is about. So that becomes even a bigger problem when you've got people that have no clue trying to make this legislation, right?
Exactly right. And, well, I mean, I don't know if it's just markets either. I mean, it seems to me that, you know, with the Iran deal that we just cut, we've got people that are living in a vacuum and they just don't get it. And I think that's frustrating. And I think you can see that, not to talk politics, but on both sides of the aisle, you know, there's non house guys that are starting to do fairly well, you know, with Sanders and Trump, because that's, I think, reflecting how frustrated everybody is, not just Republicans or Democrats, but everybody.
Well, no, I agree with that. Look, I'm a firm believer that both sides of the aisles are wrong and have and we've turned what was a good system, and this didn't happen overnight. I mean, it's been happening obviously for years, but what was a good system into a disaster of raising money and seeing how much, you know, I call it steal the old man's bundle. You know, they keep grabbing, you know, every guy who goes in comes out richer than he went in. It doesn't make a lot of sense when I watch it. And certainly we're tired, I think, of the establishment and the way that it all works. And I think that there has to be some changes, because you can see that people are sick and tired of it as well, as to what's happening with guys like that. And that's why a guy like Trump is getting traction and a guy like Sanders is getting traction. But I got a whole bunch of more things to talk to my man Scott Chalady, Scott the Cow Guy, TGM Securities, on Fox, all over the place, because Mr. Varney, our buddy, who we rotate doing every other day, had some interesting comments, and I want to get your views on that. This is the Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz with Scott Chalady. If you missed an episode, libertytalk.fm on demand. We're going to step out here for a break and come back with more from Scott right after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz, will be right back.
Right, turn off the lights, we're going to lose our minds tonight.
Welcome back to the Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with Scott Chalady, the Cow Guy, TGM Securities, Floor Broker, contributor for Fox, The Bubba Report, Sky News, Successful Farming. He does it all, and he is... The beauty about Scott is he really has all sides of the world covered because he is a farmer. He has the farming background, the pedigree. Plus, he is in the equity business, so he really gets it. And he's going to be doing all of our executions for all of our farmers on their on our hedge programs. So I'm excited about that. But, Scott, we've got Stuart Varney. Now, you've been on with him the last couple of days, and I was on with him, and he is really hot about this Bernie Sanders tax structure. And I tweeted him. I said, look, I'm going to work to the maximum that I'm taking off the rest of the time, and I'm going to collect entitlements until I have to reset. What do you think?
Well, you know, I think I've heard Stuart rail about the fact that, you know, he's got six kids and I don't know how many grandchildren, and, you know, he's got Sanders that wants to tax him up to 60%. I mean, this is a, you know, let's review the tax system real quick. You know, having a British passport, taxes were mainly started in Britain a long time ago. I'm going to say 400 or 500 years ago, and it was supposed to be temporary to get the Queen out of trouble. Well, we all know how that worked out. And then in the 70s, when Britain had their tax rate at 90-95%, you saw a lot of folks like the Beatles and other great British bands come to the U.S. and domicile here because they just weren't going to pay the tax. So there is a, you know, a diminishing return when we start to jack those taxes up. And one of them being, you know, one of the bigger ridiculous ones would be to stop working, like you said, or actually leave your own country. But at the same time, you know, Art Laffer will tell you, you know, if we have taxes that are reasonable, people tend to pay them. So we need to come to an agreement. And this is the problem. We don't work with each other anymore. But, you know, just Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan got along behind closed doors. I mean, they might not have gotten along outside very much, but behind closed doors, they reached over and shook hands on a lot of things, and we need to have a lot more of that because that's what's going to get these taxes down, and people are going to realize that if we are reasonable, people will pay their tax. If we go up and it's egregious, people will start to avoid, and they'll, you know, they'll do as much as give up their U.S. passport if that's what it takes, because as a society, on an annual basis right now, we lose more citizens per capita than any other country in the world. Because even our guys are just getting fed up with the tax system here.
Well, I mean, I can understand that. I mean, I would like to see, I mean, obviously I'd like to just see a flat tax, and I think it becomes a bigger problem. And then you look at places like New York, which is where Varney is from, and Los Angeles. I mean, by the time you get through paying the city tax and all these other taxes, I mean, it's you have no money left. And that is not the way to build and get growth, because if you do what they want, what we're hearing that they want to do, you are now going to tell every entrepreneur out there, well, don't go to work because you're not going to make enough money anyways, because the more you make, the more you're going to have to pay. And then these guys like Ben and Jerry's come on air and say, oh, no, we like that kind of tax structure. I mean, I don't get that. Do you get that?
Well, I mean, I saw that as well. No, I don't get it. And I was especially more confused because, you know, those guys are the ones that have kind of pioneered the different types and flavors of ice cream. So you have a ton of different choices. And yet they were kind of talking about loving a system that gives you hardly any choices. So I think that's a big problem. I also think another problem that most Americans are feeling, and this is why we've got these non-establishment guys that are getting some traction, is because, you know, when somebody doesn't have any skin in the game, but they can tell you how to spend your tax dollars, that's bothersome, you know? So if you don't make any money, yet you have a vote, and that's going to be a very touchy subject. But people that don't earn any income have no skin in the game, and then they can vote about how they want their tax dollars to be gathered and spent. That's a problem. So we have to address that, and I think some of the candidates have said something like that. Even if you only make $10 a year, you still have to give up a buck, but you need to have something in, you know, some sort of skin in the game, or you really can't have an opinion. That's the problem. So, and on top of that, we're almost to the tipping point where we've got just under 50% of the country is on some sort of government handout as well. So that vote's going to continue to grow, and then as long as we keep turning our back on the immigration problem. So if you're a fiscal conservative, it doesn't look too good for you right now.
Well, now, I have a solution, okay, and I want to get your opinion, okay, and you can choose to comment or not comment on it, but I say, okay, if we want to continue to give out all these entitlements, which I don't agree with, and Social Security is not an entitlement, you paid for that yourself, but if you want to continue to give out and allow people to make basically more money to stay home than go to work, I say, okay, fine, you want the entitlement, then you have to give up your right to vote. while you're on an entitlement package, because you're voting to keep the entitlement going versus get the country growing. So my opinion is if you're on an entitlement program, until you come off of that program, do not have the right to vote. Would you care to comment? Yes or no?
Well, you know what, you're gonna stir a lot of things up there, but yeah, I totally get that, and I've said for a long time now, I'm not a Republican, I'm not a Democrat, I'm a common sensian. You know, I just want it to be common sense. So, like I said, if you don't put anything into the pot, how can you say where the pot should be spent? I mean, it just doesn't make sense to me. So common sense would say what you said. Hey, if I'm not doing anything and just taking handouts, then I'm not really contributing to society. And if I'm not contributing to society that way, I shouldn't really probably be able to contribute at the ballot box either. And I think that's common sense.
Well, and listen, you are from the same thing. I mean, what we really need is we need somebody who's more center aisle, that gets it from both sides, that wants to work with everybody. I mean, like a Ronald Reagan. Now, do you like Trump, his message? Do you like what he's got to say? Do you like that he's outside the box, that he says a lot of things that nobody has the balls to say?
You know, and I'm on record now saying this. I think, you know, we have to be careful about if you don't make any money, you can't vote, because there are some senior citizens that are not retired, so there would have to be something set aside for them. But as far as Trump goes, he struck a chord with a lot of people, that, you know, a lot of blue collar folks that I know that are going to vote for Trump, because he wants to bring a lot of the jobs back from China and Mexico. He wants to close the border. He says a lot of things that are common sense, you know, I mean, just things that, now when pressed on a plan, or when pressed on his background, I think that's a little unfair, because he's been in business for 40 years and there's going to be the odd bankrupt business here and there. But he's built a big enough empire, and I think what was really, really ironic was I was watching some show where it was a fairly wealthy New York businessman, and they asked him, it was a liberal show, they asked him who he was going to vote for, and he said, I'm voting for Donald Trump, and everybody almost fell off their chair. And he says, well, let me just give you three things. He says, number one, the guy is 69 years old. Most of these politicians want power and money. Well, he's already got both of those. I mean, it's a pain in the rear end to be flying around. I mean, he doesn't need the power and the money. So he must be doing it for some other reason, right? And number two, he is 69. It's a tough road. And he gets called not collaborative. He gets called saying, you know, they call him out, they think he's a racist, or you know, he doesn't like foreigners. Well, the guy, there's never been a bigger collaborator in New York's history. I mean, can you imagine being with the Pipefitters Union, the city zoning, the utilities, streets and sand? When you're building a building, you've got to get five or eight different groups going all in the same direction to stay on plan and to stay on budget and get this thing built on time. Now, that's a pretty big collaborator. So I kind of think that a lot of America is looking at a guy going, hey, at least he's done something. Yeah. I mean, you know, you're going to fail every now and again. And, you know, you fail 7 out of 10 times, you're still in the Hall of Fame if you play baseball. So at the end of the day, I think that a lot of America is looking at it like that. Hey, this guy's done something. Who look at everybody else. They haven't done anything.
Well, they're professional politicians. And I want to just clarify one thing. I said, when I asked you the question about voting, Social Security is not an entitlement, in my opinion. It's something that they're paid for. So retired people will not lose that right, because, again, I don't consider Social Security an entitlement program. That's something that you and I both put in every year, with whether we'll get it or not. Yeah. It's another story.
But technically, it's supposed to be your money. Yeah.
So that's right. To me, that's not an entitlement program. So if that got to anybody, that's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about people that are able to work that didn't pay into Social Security, and that would be on that part. So as we look at the whole message that's being sent, okay, and you mentioned manufacturing and bringing jobs back. Now, I think Trump sends a good message, and I like what he has to say. I know a lot of people don't like him, but Alphabet or Google is setting up their company just like Donald Trump. Their whole new business is built so that they can buy these companies and bankrupt them under a different name in case it doesn't work. That's why they had this big change in the Alphabet Google wars now, because they could now do that, because before they bought a lot of companies and they had to take the write down within the company. So that's why they separated, so they can set up these little enterprises. There's nothing wrong with going bankrupt. A lot of major places have done so. I mean, I don't, you know, again, it's not great, but at the end of the day, business business is business. And if the bank, if the United States didn't have a printing press, we'd be bankrupt right now. But we're going to come back with Scott and talk more about that when we come back to the break. This is Scott Shalady, ScottTheCowGuy.com, TJM Securities, contributor to Fox, to Sky, to everything, successful farming. This is The Bubba Show. You missed an episode, LibertyTalk.fm. This is Todd Bubba Horowitz. We'll be right back after the break with more from Scott. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz.
I don't need baggy clothes or rings in my nose.
Trust. For nearly four decades, that is the reputation Roberts & Roberts Brokerage has forged with their customers. Now, with their full e-commerce website, rrbi.co, it's easier than ever to buy or sell precious metals via Bitcoin or major credit card. Visit them online at rrbi.co or call 800-874-9760 to speak with an experienced professional today. Roberts & Roberts, when you're serious about precious metals.
What's up, everybody? Bubba here. It's finally here, the long-awaited Bubba Report, bringing you news from all the trading floors across the globe. We've got Scott Shalady, the cow guy, as seen on CNBC, Fox, and Bloomberg. We've got Keith Bliss, CNBC, Fox, and a floor trader at the New York Stock Exchange. We've got The Badger, who writes the hot topics in the political news. We've got myself putting together my own unique indexes that will help you, give you a better idea of what's going on in the market. All you need to do to get a hold of the Bubba Report is go to thebubbashow.org and sign up for the newsletter, or you can email me direct at bubba@thebubbashow.org. We want you to have this report because we've got over 150 years of experience talking about markets, getting ready for the trading, and puts you in the best position to have successful. So email me at bubba@thebubbashow.org to get a copy of your report, or go right to the website, thebubbashow.org. Make sure you get it. It's a must-have for every investor and trader. The Bubba Report. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend, my partner, my man, Scott Shalady, contributor to The Bubba Report, part of Bubba Trading. He's going to do all of our executions. Also, TJM Securities. Also, contributor to Fox, Sky, Successful Farming. Does it all. So, Scott, we talk about bringing back manufacturing. Can it be done?
Not right now. No, I mean, over the last 7 years, we've lost over 15,000 plants in the U.S. I mean, think about 15,000 plants. I mean, we're in an earnings recession. We're in a manufacturing production recession. I mean, I want to say I'd like to see it come back, but we're going to need some sort of green grass, you know, green shoots of growth that are going to get us going, because We're still in a negative loop right now, Todd, and I don't see what's going to really kind of pull us out of it.
Well, and I agree with that, and I guess that comes back down to the guys who run the country. And you know, I said it in joking manner before he went to break, but the truth of the matter is you know, as long as the Fed has paper and ink, they'll keep printing money. And of course, that means that they don't have to worry about bankruptcy like every normal business does. And make no mistake, the government is a business like any other, and it should have to operate on a budget, and it does not. But is there a solution of cutting rates down? I mean, the original problem that manufacturing started to leave off and go offshore was because the price here, the unions and all the dollars were so expensive that you couldn't really make it now. But now that it's changed, is there a way to entice any of these to come back? Do we have the ability to compete with guys overseas in a similar price point, or are we going to still be out of line price-wise?
No, I think we do. I think it's a good segue because, you know, just like the Fed has exhausted all their monetary possibilities, you know, monetary reform to try to get the economy going, we're now going to have to rely on fiscal reforms, and that's going to absolutely help a lot of those manufacturers, because when we do things fiscally that could change their tax structure or the likes, that's going to help a lot too. Maybe rolling back Obamacare would also help, because I know that our car companies are almost competitive again internationally, but their largest one single item expenses is paying for the insurance of the guys that are working for them. So if we could get a little bit more competitive there and we'd have some fiscal reforms, there's absolutely no reason why we couldn't see some of our manufacturing come back. And I think there's been a couple of plants that have started back up again. But, you know, at the same time that we might get a lot of this done, number one, we'd like to get some fiscal reforms done, but not in the middle of an election year. That's not going to happen. And number two, it would be nice to have the fiscal reform kind of, you know, go hand in hand with some sort of new technological innovation that kind of gets things going. But I think, you know, just the simple stuff, Todd, like, why can't we bring back foreign, you know, earned income from offshore? Well, you know why they really can't do it? And I just learned this about a month or two ago. You know, it just seems simple to me. Why wouldn't you just let Apple bring everything back home and just charge them only 12%, right? Because you think, well, I'm going to get 12% on whatever they've got overseas. That's better than nothing, because right now I get nothing. The problem is, at today's tax rates, the government's already booked it. So it would cost them money to give them a deal on the tax rate to bring it back, if you know what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So the government's booked it at a much higher rate as a accounts receivable, and so they can't lower the tax rate. I mean, it boggles your mind. So now we've got all this capital sitting over there that could come back for bridges and roads, and, I mean, we could give a ton of incentive to those guys to then hire a bunch of Americans to fix these bridges and roads. I mean, our infrastructure is falling apart. But no, because we've booked it at a higher tax rate, it's going to cost us money on that accounts receivable. We are not going to lower the tax rate. It just boggles your mind.
Don't you love our GAAP accounting, general accepted accounting principles, that goes throughout the world right now, that they all happen to mark these good assets against their balance sheet at higher prices than they're worth, and they mark their bad assets up higher than they should be. And it becomes an overall mess, which I think creates even a bigger problem overall, because we don't have an accurate accounting of what they're doing. And this goes back to Japan when they bought and sold Pebble Beach. At the time, it was the biggest, highest real estate deal ever. And they kept that on their books, although the value kept plummeting. They kept it on their value in their books at what they paid for it. So this is a general problem in accounting practices that is really more or less tearing apart the country and the system as well. What do you think about that?
I totally agree. I absolutely agree. And I happen to be the managing director of a large Japanese bank in Europe when I was there, and I saw it happen right before my eyes. So, I mean, there's a lot of differences between, say, Japan and America, but there's also a lot of similarities. And we're starting to look a lot like them by a lot of the things that we're doing here ourselves. I mean, think about it. They've been going through what we've been going through since 1990, Todd. I mean, and they have not been able to spur on any growth. Now they've just embarked upon, as we all know, negative interest rates. So is this the world we're really living in? I mean, it boggles my mind why we can't get any demand or soak any inflation. But it's just because we need to have something new. I mean, we got rescued by the Internet revolution. I mean, let's just face it. That was something big. We couldn't imagine it coming, and it really was a shot in the arm to the economy. But we kind of ate it up too quick and burned it out and spit it out, and now we're back to a problem again of not having any real true growth to kind of hang our hats on. So we're going to need some sort of great innovation. Hopefully it's got something to do with healthcare and technology together. But then we're going to have people live longer, and that's going to be more expensive, and then we'll be in trouble that way. I mean, there's a lot of things on the horizon that we got to kind of pull ourselves up by our bootstraps, get a little bit more efficient, like with our hedges, and kind of hunker down for the long haul, because the story is not how things aren't going well. The story is going to be how things aren't going well for so long.
Well, I think that, and I do think that's, I agree with you here, that this is the bigger problem. We are the makings of Japan 30 years ago, and why nobody can see that, why no economist can see this, that the damage that we're actually doing by artificially financial engineering stock markets, because at the end of the day, Scott, and you've said this on more than one occasion, there's so little money of the overall world money in the markets that why are they so concerned and creating so much debt just to keep these markets running? Can you explain that to me?
It's like they just don't want to. It's like I've never seen so many central bankers pull the Band-Aid off so slowly. I mean, that's really what we have to do. And there's going to be collateral damage, but no politician's willing to admit that and or suffer through that. Because then he's not going to get his big wad of cash at the end of his, you know, seven terms. He wants to continue as, I mean, I'm sorry that I'm so skeptical, but that's really the bottom line, is that they want to keep this merry-go-round growing in the hopes that somewhere around the corner, you know, we have a knight in white, in shining armor, a white knight in shining armor that's going to come with some sort of big GDP number or some sort of big growth number that's going to make it all go away and everybody's going to, you know, it's all okay. But that's not happening right now. And the reset button is kind of an ugly button to hit if you've been in this situation for 30 years, and Japan's going through that right now. And well, I don't understand why we've got the smartest guys in the world. They can't look overseas and go, well, that's the menu that we're following. How come we're following it and they've proven it doesn't work? I mean, don't you think it's funny when you see people embark on quantitative easing? It didn't work here.
We're going to talk more about that in the last part of the show, but because obviously you know my fangs are out right now, and I'm really disturbed by everything that's happening, because it's the solution seems so simple. And I do want to ask you, you know, about the healthcare. I mean, if the insurance companies and the doctors would just sit down together and work this out, we could probably get rid of Obamacare, because the principle of Obamacare was fine. I mean, I get the principle, everybody should be insured, and I'm all for that, because again, a lot of people had that problem. But the actual working of it and the disaster that it created was stupid. And instead of sitting down and saying, hey, let's get the doctors and the insurance companies on board to make this program, because right now what happens is the doctors charge a bill, the insurance companies beat them down, and it's a battle. And who gets screwed in the end? The middle class guy. The guy's got to pay his bill. He gets the shaft. But if these guys would sit down, that could be the revolution that changes everything and brings more money into everybody's pocket. Any thought to that?
Yeah, I agree. And I think that any mildly educated person, Todd, would agree on these two principles. Number one, we have to have some sort of system that is like a catch-all that can, you know, catches the people that fall through the cracks. Because there's going to be people that just have a hard time, bad luck, whatever. You know, sometimes stuff just doesn't go your way. There has to be some sort of catch-all, so we're not letting people die in the streets. And at the same time, we can't have a solid middle-class family that saved all their, you know, pennies for the last 40 years and have somebody get real sick and they have to sell their house, they lose everything because they have to pay some, you know, astronomical bill. Those two things, I think if we got the smartest minds in the room and came up with a decent solution, that would eradicate Obamacare, because we've already got a lot of programs out there that do what Obamacare does already. So I just think that we really only have two things we have to worry about. You shouldn't go bankrupt if you get cancer when you're 55. And there's going to be some people that are mentally unfit or have a bunch of bad luck that we just need to be able to look after, and when they fall through the cracks. That's it. Then everything else, I think, falls in line.
And I would be happy to take care of those people, because that would make sense. But of course, that would be too smart. But we have too many people that know how to read a theory, but don't know how to implement it through, as you said earlier, and as we always talk about, common sense. Because
are we talking about the Fed now?
Well, we're not there yet, but we're going to be there. But the whole thing is about common sense. I mean, you and I both know that the solution is simple, yet because people are fighting over, they're fighting over money. What a shock. It's always over money, and it's always over something ridiculous and some asshole's way of doing things. But I'm going to come back with Scott. We're going to clean up with Scott, and we are going to talk about the Fed, because I put it off long enough, but I got to get your take on it. This is Scott Shalady, ScottTheCowGuy.com, TJM Securities, on TV, Fox, Varney every week, on Sky Business, writes for Successful Farming. He does everything. He's so busy, I can't keep up with him, but I love him. He is part of the Bubba Report. This is The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. We will be back after the break. The Bubba Show, Todd Bubba Horowitz. Welcome back to The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horowitz with my friend Scott Shalady. ScottTheCowGuy.com, Scott the writer for the Bubba Report, Scott the broker for TGM Securities, Scott the broker for our farmers and their hedges, and the writer for Successful Farming, Varney, Fox, Sky, everything. But Scott, all right, here it is. I say that the Federal Reserve is broken, that they have no idea. Now, they may be smart. I'm not taking away their intelligence from the reading of a book. But I'm going to go all the way back to Greenspan. Greenspan, Bernanke, and Yellen have done nothing of real worth for the economy but build a bubble to push to kick the can down the road to try to make some imaginary dream here, which isn't part of reality. And they have done so much financial engineering and done so much damage to the U.S. dollar in actual value that until we decide to let free markets and real price discovery take place, all we're looking for is from one bubble to the next crash. That's my opinion. What say you?
You're right, and it's just simply this, you know, in the efforts to keep the coffers running and keep whatever they're getting from their constituencies or whatever campaign finance they raise, or they're just pulling demand forward, and we've eaten it all up. So now there's no, we've already pulled today's demand we used up already about 3 years ago. So now that we're here and we've pulled all the demand forward, there isn't really any true demand left anymore. That's the problem. So a lot of the tools that they've used come out of a 1956 economics book. Well, you can't run the U.S. economy in this environment in 2016 on a book that's 50 years old. They're smart. They probably wrote that book. But at the end of the day, those tools were, you know, you would have lost the war if this was a war and we were using ammo, because we've moved on to Star Trek kind of stuff, and we're still using bows and arrows to solve our problems. So that's the problem. We're not adapting with the problem. We're stuck in our old ways of fighting inflation. They're scared to death of deflation because they don't know what to do about it. They'd much rather have an inflation problem than a deflation problem. That's why they're always trying to stoke it. So they don't know what to do with a deflationary problem because it's a large part of it's psychological. And there isn't any chapter of any economics book that's going to talk about psychology in markets. But inflation, no problem. Just raise rates. I mean, can anybody, December the 16th, what did they know? I mean, what was so good December the 16th that wasn't even better January the 16th of that year? Hey. I mean, it defies odds. So we go ahead and raise rates, which boggles my mind. And ever since we've raised them, that 10-year has gone up and the yield's gone down lockstep up until today. But we're still at 175. We raised rates when we were at 2.25.
You know, Scott, it's frightening. Now, we are obviously we operate under the Keynesian theory of economics, which, again, I'm not saying Western is better. I've said this many times. I don't know what's better. I don't know the right thing, but I do know that they're all flawed. And this one for sure, because John Maynard Keynes, who this whole economic system is built on, said in 1928, there will be no more crashes in our time. And since that time, we've had, I think, 11 or 12 of ones of notable, and then a bunch of minis in between there. So we know that this theory of continuing to try to patch and print money and to do things does not work. That I will say that online out loud, that the theory that our geniuses go by, and again, I'm not taking away their intelligence from a book score or an ACT score or college grades, but when it comes to common sense, they have no idea, and they have now painted themselves into such a corner. And I believe that Janet Yellen raised rates in December. First of all, it cost me $20 because I bet on national TV $20 they wouldn't raise. And second of all, just to prove that they have a little credibility, which in my opinion, they have none. What you say?
Well, I'm disappointed that my government now is raising rates to prove credibility, but not raising rates for the right reasons of cooling off inflation. I mean, I've almost 30 years in this business, and we've always raised rates to get out in front of an overheating economy or, you know, cool off an already overheating economy. Not for credibility purposes. Are you kidding me? So now raising rates is a political ploy? I mean, come on. That's pretty disappointing. Now, back to the farming thing real quick. You know, I've got the burden of common sense and the burden of having a little bit of a farm background, because if it looks like crap, smells like crap, tastes like crap, guess what? It's probably crap.
Yeah.
Well, you can say that about all of these things that we've been doing to try to make our economy better here. Operation Twist, whatever the new car loan thing was, when cash for clunkers. I mean, it runs the gamut of embarrassment. And so here we are, no better off, and we've got a balance sheet that's been expanded by $5 trillion and our debt's $19 trillion. Way to go.
Hey, you know, and it was just so simple that it was so simple a fifth grader would figure it out that instead of continuing to pound the money into the banks to actually put America back to work and rebuild the country, but that would have been too simple and we would have spent too much money and we wouldn't have any problems right now. But that's always the case. So the financial engineering throughout the globe. Now, I've discussed openly that I'm almost thinking that the central banks around the world are almost in a conspiracy. They take turns of opening up their yap to move something because it just happens too much for my taste. What's going on? Do you put any resolve into that?
Oh, absolutely. They absolutely are talking all week, every week. There's no doubt about it in my mind that they're very, very well in touch with each other. And they're very well in tune with each other's economies. But I also know that they all have no answer for the problems, or we would have been out of it by now. I mean, it might have been just as simple as this. Just give every U.S. citizen $5,000. See what the price of TVs does then. See how much inflation you get if you give every American $5,000 cash. There's your inflation you've been trying to buy all this time. They've been trying to buy, every major central bank's been trying to buy inflation. But you need to buy inflation by importing inflation. And by importing inflation, you have to take it from somebody that's already got it. But we're in a globe right now where nobody's got any inflation. We need to find a new planet that's got a bunch of inflationary economies that we can borrow from them and then export our deflation to. That's as simple as it gets. We're trying to buy or import inflation, but there's nowhere to buy it from or take it because nobody's got any. That's the biggest problem, and that's keeping the central banks, central bankers awake at night.
All right, so last, as we come to the end here, but now, I say the Fed is broken, and that there's too much interference from the likes of Goldman Sachs and J.P. Morgan and the government, which is not supposed to be any of those things happening. I say that either they need to end the Fed, rework the Fed, or come up with a better model, because the way it was designed and the power that they have is not does not do us any good. What are your thoughts?
I'd say all the above. I like it. I just wish we had some younger minds that have seen a little bit different stuff go on and have a little bit of different take on how economies should be run and, you know, these inflation targets and the deflationary issues that we face. I think those people are all very bright, but it's just not working. And like I said, I suffer. I've been, the burden of common sense is telling me that, you know, I get angry at myself for paying so much attention to what they say, because all you got to do is go back in the last 8 years and read what they said, and they're nowhere near being anywhere close to correct. So why am I, as Scott Shelby, giving these people the time of day? It's because everybody else says, and we should all be ashamed of ourselves because they are wrong. The one thing they are is consistent, and it's consistently wrong. So here we go again. The whole world's going to be running around chasing our tails, trying to figure out what the Fed's going to do, even though it's going to be wrong. That's what our markets are nowadays. How to trade the Fed's wrong predictions.
Scott Shaletti, I love when you come on. It's not often enough, but you are a part of the team, and you are my guy, and you've done it all, and I appreciate your time today. Thank you so much.
No problem.
Was our buddy Scott Shaletti from TJM, from Fox Business, from all the major news networks, but also part of the Bubba Report and part of the Bubba team and everything else good about him. He's a great guy. Excuse me. Understanding, knows the markets, understands it all. And that's what we like, is we like to have people that understand the basic concept of a market. And that will do it for today. But make sure you check out our friends at Thinkorswim. Also, make sure you check out BubbaTrading.com. You will find great programs. We have a lot of things that we have to offer, plus just great articles if you just want to browse and check out what's going on. If you ever miss a show, libertytalk.fm will get you the show every single day. And right now, we just passed the 200,000 monthly downloads. So I'd love to see you as one of them. And that'll do it for today. I appreciate your time. Appreciate you being here. This is The Bubba Show. Todd Bubba Horace. We'll see you back here tomorrow. Same time, same station. Egbert, everybody, thank you so much. We'll see you later.
Revolutionary talk for revolutionary times. Liberty Talk FM.